Now I have the pleasure of introducing the Reverend Dr. Alvin Coleman, the first pastor of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, for its first 19 years, in fact. Pastor Coleman, thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
What led to your becoming a pastor?
Well, as long as I can remember, I wanted to be a pastor. My father was a pastor. My grandfather was a pastor. And my father certainly encouraged me to be a pastor. And when I was young, I remember when I was probably about 3 years old, standing beside my father as he was greeting people after leaving church that day. So all my life, I just felt that's exactly where the Lord wanted me.
And you've been greeting people in the Lord's name ever since.
Right.
Now, your father died when you were pretty young, didn't he?
Yes, he passed away when I was only 13 years old.
What a crucial time for a young man.
Yes, and especially so because of he had just completed the confirmation instruction, and we were waiting for that day of confirmation, and then a different pastor had to come in and do the confirming and the questioning.
Boy, that had to be tough for you.
It was very difficult.
Not that you didn't know the answers, but I mean just to imagine your dad doing it, not getting a chance. Did that have anything to do with your faith formation?
It was very sad. Since I was just finishing up the eighth grade, I knew that I was going to be going away to one of our Lutheran high schools. It was just a matter of making an adjustment.
So you were looking forward more than backward?
Yes.
Which might have been a God thing.
Yeah, well, I was really doing both. I went up to St. Paul, Minnesota, to Concordia High School up there. And then I also stayed there in St. Paul, Minnesota, and went to the junior college, Concordia, which is now Concordia University in St. Paul. I had two sisters, and they went with my mother. They went up to St. Paul, Minnesota when I went up there, and she got a job. My mother did working at Montgomery Ward, and the girls went to school up there in St. Paul, Minnesota. I would see them on the weekends, basically.
Yeah, go to mom's house for dinner on Sundays. Yeah. Where did you attend seminary?
At Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri. And I graduated from there in 1954 and received the call to serve as a pastor at St. Paul Lutheran Church in West Frankfort, Illinois.
How long did you stay there?
I was there about 5 years, from 1954 to 1959.
And this is where God was grooming you for a mission congregation. Did you have any idea that was happening at the time?
Yes, in a way I did. I mean, I was always very much interested in mission work. Even while I was at the seminary, they asked me if I would be willing to serve as a foreign missionary. And I had said that I would if that's where the Lord wanted me. So then I was sent down to this congregation. And one of the things that made me so happy about that was the fact that the call document said that it was the only Lutheran church in a 50-mile radius. And so I thought, man, there's going to be wonderful opportunities down there. They neglected to tell me it was solid Baptist country.
There's one catch. How did it go for you there?
It went fine. I mean, I enjoyed my ministry down there very much, and the church grew. It was only about 80, 90 members when I came there. It was about 122 when I left, and I didn't really think that was very good, because I expected much better growth. But when I reflected back on it, it wasn't too bad at all, considering the area and so on.
And then you received the call to Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville. You were not the first pastor they called. We learned from Harold Alkus earlier today. You were the third pastor. Third time's the charm, or how did you take that?
Well, I'm not so sure that I even knew that before I accepted the call.
Probably not, yeah.
But that's correct. I understand I was the third one that was called.
And you were the right one. We know that for sure. God was just waiting through some others until they got to you. You begin from scratch, really.
Really, it was more of an unusual situation for a mission congregation, because most of the time you'll go into an area and you start with maybe just a handful of people. Whereas in this situation, the district had decided that that another church was needed in Collinsville because of the growth there. And so they were talking to the various congregations in the area about helping out. And when they talked to Holy Cross Lutheran Church here in Collinsville, They said that they were willing to transfer any members that wanted to start a new congregation, particularly those that lived out on the northern edge of the city.
What were some of the numbers in your beginnings?
Well, they had a group of 77 communicants and 114 souls. And so that was really a remarkable beginning for a mission congregation to have that many. And we were very, very pleased to have that many. And we went, this group had already met several times, and they had already formed into a group that wanted to call when they issued a call. And they also made arrangements for the first church building. And what they did was they built the parsonage, but left out the inner walls so that they could use that as a church. And then later they felt when they got a new church, then that would become the parsonage, which is what happened.
How did your God-given gifts match this call?
Like I said, I always had a very strong interest in mission evangelism, and I'm a friendly person, and I knew that in order for the congregation to grow, they had to have good leadership, but they also had to have someone who was out there working, visiting people, and talking to people everywhere. So I always had wanted to start a mission congregation anyway. The Lord, I think, motivated me that way.
That was a good match. When I think about your gifts, I'm remembering that Rich and I did not join that congregation until you'd been around about 11 years. Mm-hmm. And by the time we met you, we had visited and you called on us. And we were going to church in St. Louis, so it was about a 25-mile drive. We were going to expect our first child, and you thought it would make much more sense if we went to church in Collinsville. And we didn't agree with you at first. But then when I realized how hard it was to haul somebody that far, it did start to appeal to us. And you were relentless. I mean, you came regularly, uninvited, and you were always very friendly. So when the time came to choose a church, you were very much on our minds. Your visits really did pay off. What I noticed through the years of working with you, first of all, I noticed my husband was on the board of elders. He became chairman of the elders before he became president. But I remember his coming home and saying, you know, Pastor Coleman and his secretary, Arlene Simmons, face one another in one office, in one room. He said, this has got to change. And so he made that happen with the elders. They made it happen together. But Harold Alkes earlier told us that they never worried about things because, first of all, they'd been through the Depression. They knew that the Lord would take care of them, and difficulties were just that. But he said, we kept saying to ourselves, it is what it is. It was such bare bones beginnings, and this was another example. You were just in that office, and I guess when someone would come in, you'd ask her to leave the room, right?
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm. You make do with what there is.
Yeah, yeah. And there was no grumbling. It was just a lovely setup. And then when you each got your own office, you must have thought you died and gone to heaven because there was privacy. And that was really interesting. But one of your strengths is that you believe in other people. You believe in God's work in them, his plan for their lives. And this was way before The Purpose-Driven Life was written. You know, you were saying that to people and helping them find those gifts. And I remember you, when you got me on a youth board somewhere in the district, you had me doing other things, even though I had four little kids. I started a Bible study at the church, and you were the one who kept identifying gifts of others so that they could see them themselves, which I thought was very observant and keen on your part. Mm-hmm. In fact, you're the one who got me to go over an interview in St. Louis at KFUO, and that ultimately resulted in a radio show that I did called Woman to Woman for 20 years. That's your fault. Except that it went well, and that's your you helped me do that. When I look back, that's certainly a strength of yours. What do you think that you did right that a 30-year-old pastor could do today?
Well, when I came there, of course, I had this fine group of people that were there. And, of course, it's always a pleasure and a joy to work to start a new congregation. Not only does a pastor appreciate that, but the members do too. And so we simply saw the various gifts that they had and put them in those positions to serve. And the result was that everybody was active and involved. We didn't have any delinquents right away.
You didn't have a lot of slackers. And I think one reason you didn't was you had an opportunity for every family in that congregation to come to your office, which was finally separated from your secretary's office, and we sat by your desk, and you would talk to each one of us about what we thought we could do.
Yeah, that was
to help things flourish.
Yeah, that was later in my ministry there. At the beginning, of course, I went out and visited every family, and I think that's very important because you need to see the family where they live to get a better idea of understanding of who they are. And of course, I followed through on that when people would come to church, that I would then go out and visit them that week so that I'd have a chance not to get better acquainted with them. And that helped me to remember their names and everything, too, because if they were in church that first Sunday and I saw them during the week and then I saw them again in church, then I remembered them from that point on.
So you were building relationships.
Yes.
Were there any things that worked for you, even though you didn't think they might, or you might not consider doing those?
No, I would try different things, of course, but I don't specifically remember what they were because almost everything we tried worked very well.
Talk about by the grace of God. Hmm?
Right.
Whenever we're doing something in Jesus' name, we are told that we will meet with some opposition. Were there any hiccups along the way that you would be willing to share?
Well, one of the things that I realized when I first came to Collinsville was that the people there, members and others, they didn't have the same respect for pastors that I was used to. I was raised in Iowa and there and everywhere I went, people had a great respect for pastors. And so I simply accepted that, and I was determined that I was going to be a good pastor so that they would respect, and that respect would translate to others as well.
You experienced some rapid growth. You started with 77, and by the time you were finished in 19 years, I don't know exactly what the attendance was, but
We had over 500 members at that time, I was very pleased. I don't know if I should say I was surprised because I expect the Lord to bless everything, and He certainly did. But the growth, happened because, well, like I said, the mission board of the district felt that a new congregation would do well there, and they were right in that. I mean, there were many opportunities for people to grow, and of course, many came in from other churches round about later on too. I mean, just a few here and there, But with all that different growth, why we found that that little parsonage made church, only held about 100 people, and it was a very short time after that. I don't remember exactly how long, but probably within the first year, we had to have two services. And so so we had two services to take care of the number of people that were there.
That was a good sign, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And by the time you were in the next church building, when we came along, you got into evangelism training. You were very big on people mm-hmm. sharing their faith.
Yeah, we because of the rapid growth that we had at the beginning, we knew that we were going to be building a more permanent church. And so from the very beginning, we started planning for that. And in 1963, only 4 years later, we moved into that new building, that new church building. And of course, one of the things that that we did there, because evangelism is intended for everybody, not just the pastor, and so we would we started an evangelism group. We asked who would like to go out and make calls, and we had about maybe half a dozen or more, and we would go out in pairs, and I would switch to different ones all the time, and go out with them, and so. So as a result of that, I mean, we were out there doing a lot of evangelism work in the area.
I was on one of your early teams, and the rule was that you would have two men and a woman or two women and a man at the time that I went out. Mm-hmm. And I did learn a lot. I learned a lot about how you can talk to people even when they leave their TVs on and you're standing there.
Right.
But it was a very good training experience for me personally and has played out well throughout my life. Just tell us about your wife, your wonderful wife, Jackie, whom I loved, because she would come and visit me after I had babies and sit here and talk, and we would laugh, and she would understand how much work it was. She would even get Rich to laugh with our short nights. But Jackie was an integral part of your ministry, wasn't she?
Most certainly. Yeah, she was just the perfect helpmeet that the Lord could provide. Beautiful, wonderful wife, mother of my five children, and she was a very independent person as well. And so when I had to be gone a lot, she was able to take care of the children. But she never hesitated to let me know if she needed a break. Should I tell you what happened in West Frankfort?
Sure.
She said that she needed some time off from the kids. And so she said she'd like to go to the movie on Wednesday night. I said, okay, we'll make arrangements for that. I said, I'll get a babysitter. No, I want to go by myself, she said. And so you take care of the children. And so I would do that. I would stay home on Wednesday night, take care of the children. She went to the movies.
Enough of this date night stuff.
Yeah.
It's a good story. We have pastors today who are very aware that they need vacation time, downtime. We don't want pastors to burn out. We didn't hear much about burnout when you were in the ministry full-time with us because you were working a lot. Mm-hmm. And I must say, Jackie did put up with some things in terms of your hours. You were gone a lot with five kids. She was a saint. But I remember Billy Graham's wife asking, did you ever consider divorce with Billy Graham? Because he was gone all the time around the world. She looked up and paused and said, murder, yes, but divorce, never. And Jackie would have been able to chime in with that one, probably. But I'm thinking about vacation days for pastors. Not vacation days, but days off during the week. Did you think like that? Let's see, I work Saturday and Sunday pretty heavily, so I'm taking Monday off. Did you? Because I know you did take time off with your family. You were there for the kids' games, and because you're really interested in athletics, so were they. How did you work that out so you didn't burn out?
Well, most pastors follow that idea that they say that the one day a week they want to have for themselves. And so you would either pick like a Monday or maybe a Friday or a Saturday or something like that. And so I usually had Friday. But I also made sure that I was home at supper time if I could arrange my schedule that way. So I was always home for supper with the kids and my wife, and then when the children grew a little older in school and they were involved in different activities, I always tried to make it if I could. Sometimes I could only make it maybe half the time or something, but the kids understood, and they appreciated very much the fact that I was that interested enough in them that I would make that effort to come.
And then if you were off on a Friday and somebody went to the hospital and needed you, you would, of course, be flexible enough to go because you didn't have an assistant pastor.
That's right.
Speaking of assistant pastors, we have a new associate pastor as of 2014. His name is Scott Adle, A-D-L-E. And I was visiting with his wife recently, and she told me her father, Pastor Dan Gilbert, was one of the early seminary field workers at Good Shepherd in Collinsville. So you must remember him.
Yes, I do. It was interesting how we got started with the field workers, because at that time, basically, the seminary in St. Louis worked on the Missouri side of the river, and they had maybe an occasional one on this side, but not many. And we had a seminarian who happened to move into the Collinsville area. And so then he went over to the seminary, but he said, why don't you just have field workers here? And he said, I'd be happy to be your first field worker. And so in that way, we got started. And not only then were we able to have field workers, but a lot of the congregations in the area then got field workers that they hadn't had before.
So you broke the mold with the field worker, and then at some point, Dan Gilbert came along.
Yeah, he came along at a very difficult time for the Synod. At that time, he was a first-year man at the seminary, and he was assigned to our congregation together with two others. And it was very difficult at that time for all congregations to decide, you know, what they were supposed to do.
Tell us what the difficulty was.
Well, the difficulty was that they felt that the faculty at the seminary was getting too liberal, following gospel criticism and so on. And
critical thought and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there was a controversy at the seminary itself, and actually it became a split, didn't it?
Yes. Yeah, they and see, that made it so difficult for the pastors who also were out in the field, because here you had your professors, and you loved them, and they did a wonderful job, and now things were changing there. We had three men at the time. We had a fourth-year man, a first-year man, and a second-year man. So when this split occurred, these three all went different ways. The fourth-year man said, I'm going to stay there because I want to graduate and get out into ministry. The second-year man said, I'm going to walk out with Seminex. The first-year man was Dan Gilbert, and he said, I don't know what to do. I'm going to drop out. And so my prayers for him then were that he would come back, because he was such a good man. And as soon as they straightened that out at the seminary, he came back. And now he's a district president up in Northern Illinois.
We're so glad he came back.
You bet.
That's a great story. And speaking of great stories and district presidents, after your 19 years at Good Shepherd, you received a call to be the district president of the Southern Illinois District. Isn't that interesting?
It is.
A lot of this one congregation. It must be in the water or the teaching or something.
Well, this this had occurred because of the difficulty in the Synod at that time. The interesting thing was that I went to one of the district conventions expecting to be elected at that time to be the circuit counselor. But instead of becoming the circuit counselor, I was elected to be second vice president. When the next term came up, and our district president at the time, Herman Neuneighbor, was one who was involved with the more liberal group there. There was a lot of pressure on him. There were people that wanted, at the one convention, they wanted to remove him, and they asked me if I would run against him. And I did not like any idea of the politics in Synod. And so I said, no, I would refuse to accept it under those conditions, but I would be open to any other positions that I might be elected to. And I happened to be elected to be first vice president at that convention. And it was just a couple of years later then, Pastor and President Neuneighbor said to the four of us, he said, I'm going to resign tomorrow night. What are you all going to do? And he was hoping that we would all say that we were going to resign too. Only one of them did. But he said, and what about you? And I said, well, I guess that makes me president. So then, but I asked the board at that time, because I dearly loved the parish and I didn't want to leave it. But I asked him at that time, I said, I'll be happy to accept, but I'd like to continue to serve the congregation until the next convention, because if I'm not elected at that point, then I want to stay with that congregation. And so they agreed. And then at the next convention, I tried to introduce a resolution that the position would be a part-time position, and that the one who was elected could decide whether he wanted to go full-time or part-time. But they changed that resolution that whoever was elected would be full-time. So that's when I realized that I had to leave the congregation to serve as the district president.
People are often surprised when I tell them that Good Shepherd Lutheran Church held off on building a large sanctuary and would have 3-4 services on a weekend in order to keep a Christian education going in their school. And people say, well, why? I mean, how could people give toward the church and then never see it be built, and didn't dreams die and that sort of thing? Now, the big church wasn't built until after you left. But had the school begun yet by the time you left, or is that just about just ripe to happen?
Well, from the very beginning, you need to remember that this group, 75 of those 77, came from Holy Cross, and they were all used to going to parochial education, and they wanted their children to go to parochial education. So we made arrangements with Holy Cross from the very beginning that our children would attend their school, and we made arrangements accordingly, paid them a little tuition at that time for each child, and then as the years went by, we found we had more and more children going there, and so and of course one of the problems in that is if the children go to a parochial school in another congregation, they frequently, you know, they're confirmed there, and then they frequently go on into the youth group and so on. And so in order to avoid that, I made arrangements to go over there every day when the pastors were teaching the children from Holy Cross, and I had our children in the library, and I taught them confirmation then at that time. So we never had the problem of losing our children that way. But, as we got more and more children, then we asked if we could perhaps pay the salary for one of the teachers, and call that teacher so that we could use their expertise in the congregation. And so they agreed to that, and so from the very beginning, we were involved with providing parochial education, Christian education. We also were involved with having at least one or two teachers in our congregation that taught there. And so everything was working out okay. I mean, we had plenty of property. We even talked about having a high school and using our property for that high school. But everything was working out fine as far as a relationship between the two congregations with the school. And so we didn't really have to confront that problem. When Pastor Cassins came, it was a little different, and he was the one who basically got the parochial school going at Good Shepherd, and he did it in a marvelous way because since we had over 75 pupils at Holy Cross, they took the big jump and had 8 grades to start with.
How well I remember. Our son was in the first graduating 8th grade class, and the two little ones were, I think, in 3rd and 4th grade.
Mm-hmm.
It was an exciting time for us, and we'll hear more about that from Pastor Castens. People wonder, what is the success secret of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church?
We had everybody working as far as reaching out with evangelism and sharing and inviting people to come. And when people came, they found a very pleasant, very welcoming atmosphere, and so they were inclined to come back again. When they found out more about the church, they found that we had a Christian day school for our children. And they got involved in different Bible studies and everything, they just had a very welcoming, wonderful, loving experience in the congregation. And so they were just attracted to it in many different ways. But the Lord was bestowing His blessings upon all the members, and everything was working fine.
Is there anything you would do differently, Pastor Coleman?
I don't think so. Not really. I mean, everything was working. When you had mentioned something earlier about visiting with the members, we had gotten to a point where everything just kind of stopped growing real, you know, it just kind of stood still a little bit. And so we talked it over with the elders and decided that what we would do is I would invite every family to come and visit with me in my office there, and then we would talk about stewardship and about Christian living and so on. And I would invite, if only the wife belonged and not the husband and so on, I would invite her, I would tell her to invite her husband, and had the children there also. And so after that visitation was complete, and took a good year to do that, you know, everything just increased by about 15% the next year. And from that moment on, we kept going on again. So whenever there were any slowdowns or something that way, we always analyze it and try to see what we should do to make it better.
And you weren't thinking alone. You were thinking with, like you said, a lot of participation from your members, mm-hmm. your elders.
All of the boards were very, very active and very much involved. And we would meet with the elders on a regular monthly basis, and we would talk about all these different things and the needs in the congregation, and we'd resolve them.
So communication was very key
yeah.
to the success of this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this summer, the summer of 2014, you will celebrate 60 years of bringing people to know Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Let's close with just a comment or an insight from you about how the Lord has guided you personally and professionally.
Well, there is no doubt that all of the things that happened at Good Shepherd, all those blessings came directly from the Lord. I mean, we were His willing servants. But the Lord is the one who does the blessing. You know, just to think back and realize all the ways in which the Lord bestowed His blessings, and every time there was a little problem, He'd be right there to answer it. And things just kept moving forward. The congregation was known throughout the district as being a very wonderful congregation.
It does have a fine reputation,
mm-hmm.
yes. And we thank you so much for your part in building it and for talking with us today.
You're sure welcome. And we thank the Lord for all these opportunities. Thank you.